You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Is your child struggling with a specific subject or need help with homework? Are they asking questions that you're not sure you can fully answer? IXL Learning is an online learning program for kids. It covers math, language arts, science, and social studies. IXL is designed. This program will improve your kids' grades. Studies done in almost every state in the country. The kids who had IXL are consistently doing better. Powered by advanced algorithms, IXL gives the right help to each kid no matter the age or personality. And it doesn't have to eat up all your time. One subscription gets you everything for all the kids in your home, pre-K to 12th grade. So don't miss out. One in four students in the U.S. are learning with IXL. IXL is used in 95 of the top 100 school districts in the U.S. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now. And listeners can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXL.com/audio. Visit IXL.com/audio to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price.
First round of the 2024 NFL Draft is in the books. Alabama had three first-round selections. J.C. Latham to the Titans, Dallas Turner to the Vikings, Kerryon Arnold to the Lions. We're going to talk about that in just a little bit, as well as some other observations from Thursday night's opening round, and even more things that we're looking forward to in the next couple of days. Hey, what's up? Hello, everybody. Welcome to Roll Pod, an Alabama sports podcast from Bama 247. I am staff writer Cody Goodwin. I'm glad you're here, joined today by Mike Rodak and Alex Scarborough. And guys, I'm guessing our favorite NFL teams all made reasonable, smart selections in the draft, and we're all happy and excited as we record this reaction pod on Friday morning, right?
Should have brought my Falcons starter jacket down just to cry into it. I love Michael Penix. This is why I can't be a Falcons fan, because they do things like this where it looks like the organization has it starting to figure it out. You don't get Bill Belichick. I think smart move for the future. And then you just, let's do something completely out of left field and draft a quarterback when we just sign one. Stupid.
So why do we think they did that? Because that was obviously the stunner of the first round, right? Like, why did they do that?
They want to be the Chiefs, and they think this is their version of doing the Patrick Mahomes thing, except they didn't do it that high in the draft, if I remember right.
Yeah, Mahomes was like 12th overall pick, or 10th, because they traded up with the Bills to 10. And I think Deshaun Watson, I forget which one went first. It was Watson and Mahomes at 10 and 12 that year. But the Falcons, I think – there could be some doubt about Kirk Cousins being 35 coming off an Achilles injury. I mean, you just signed him. Yeah. But what if he doesn't look very good? Then where does it get you? Plus, I think GMs and that GM is Terry's been there for a couple of years now. But when you draft a young quarterback, you kind of have the benefit of it resets the clock on you a little bit. And you can kind of use that as, especially if he plays. The GM can kind of say, well, we need to see how the young quarterback develops. Like, let's give him a year or two until we can really judge me, until we can really judge the pick. And so I do think there's some element of kind of extending things out a little bit. And that's what people thought the Giants were going to do. People thought the Giants were going to pick a quarterback at six, and that buys Brian Daboll and Joe Shane some time when they're kind of getting a little bit of a, you know, hot seat feel, if you want to say. And instead, they go out and they draft Malik Nabers, and they still have an issue at quarterback. And if that doesn't work out, then it could force them out earlier. So, you know, I wouldn't discount some of those dynamics being at play. And there was kind of an awkward press conference after between Fontenot and Raheem Morris, where I didn't see the whole thing, but it seemed like, I don't know if there's entirely unison on the pick there. So, and what happened with Kirk Cousins too, in terms of contacting him and telling him that they were picking a quarterback too. So there's a lot of dynamics at play in NFL front offices when you have a GM and a head coach, plus an owner, you know, at play as well.
Of the many differences between the Falcons looking for their Patrick Mahomes and what the Chiefs did back in, what was that, 2017? They also called the incumbent quarterback before they announced the pick and said, hey, we're doing this. You're still our guy, referring to Alex Smith at the time. And then a year later, they moved into Patrick, and the rest is history, right? On top of that, my first thought for the Falcons, at least, and then we'll get into the Alabama portion of this show because that's why people are tuning in. But I know that there's a segment of our readers that are, you know, Atlanta sports fans. Could this be a play to make it like Jordan Love 2.0, right? Like when the Packers still had Aaron Rodgers and like they're thinking, okay, like aging quarterback, we're not sure how much longer he's going to be. Let's draft Jordan Love in the first round. And then what, Rodgers had back-to-back MVP seasons. Then they shipped him off. Then they kind of restructured an extension with Jordan Love. And then he obviously took them to the divisional round last year and played really, really well. Could this be that maybe in Atlanta where it's like, all right, you got Kirk for contract-wise at least 2 years, right, because of the cap hits. And then, you know, if Penix comes along, maybe in 2 years, possibly 3 years, you move off of Cousins to then allow Penix to shine. I don't know. That was one of the thoughts that came to my mind.
If it is, I don't know that there's enough evidence to say that that's the route to go. I just think this is like massive overthinking. If these are the rabbit holes you need to go down to justify a decision, the decision's simple. You paid Kirk Cousins X million dollars guaranteed.
$100 million
over 4 years. And you do the one thing that's not going to help him. Literally the one thing, you could have drafted a kicker in the first round and it would have been a better choice for Kirk Cousins.
Will Reichard was right there, man.
I just don't think Kirk Cousins is that good. Like, I think he's good, but I don't think he's ever been like, he's never brought Minnesota to where they need to go. Which is why they didn't really keep him. So it's like, I know people are enamored with Kirk Cousins, but he's 35. He's coming off an Achilles injury. He's probably not the guy that's going to bring them to an NFC championship game or a Super Bowl. So why not take a swing on somebody else? Like, I don't hate the move. I just think it's a little bit, you probably overspent on your bridge quarterback if it's going to be Kirk Cousins, as opposed to going out and getting somebody, you know, like a Jacoby Brissett or whoever, you know, Baker Mayfield, whatever.
Yeah, just trade for a first-round pick next year and use that pick to get a quarterback.
Well, there's clearly, I mean, sometimes teams will kind of think ahead and be like, well, we don't have to get a quarterback this year, trade up to get a quarterback if we feel like we might be in a position to get one next year. There doesn't seem to be a whole lot of that going on. And I think there's questions about who the quarterbacks will be next year. I mean, Quinn Ewers is probably the guy, but beyond that, like, there's not, you know, who's really the top quarterbacks coming out next year.
And no disrespect to Quinn Ewers, but like, if he's the top quarterback prospect that we know of, at least right now, we'll wait until the college season ultimately unfolds. But not, you know, like, that's significantly different than, you know, Caleb Williams, Drake May, Jaden Daniels, you know, which was the case this year, like much deeper this year. So, you know, what's the phrase? The best time to get a quarterback is when you don't need one. Like, this could also be a play on the Falcons just kind of protecting themselves, because now they've got at least 5 years of rookie quarterback play. And like you said, Mike, could be resetting the clock.
Because you got a quarterback who isn't injury prone. Oh, wait, you did.
Ha.
I mean, sorry.
This is why I can't watch the Falcons anymore.
Maybe it's like the other team in Georgia, the Bulldogs. They already have Carson Beck. They know they're not going to have Beck after this year, and they go out and get Jaden Rashada.
Playing the long game.
Yeah. Playing the long game. I think it's good business. I don't hate the move. I know it kind of got panned last night, but I was not. Maybe I'm just a Penix guy. Like, I think he has a shot to be pretty good if he stays healthy. That's, you know, his knees and all that are the big deal, but if he's better than Kirk Cousins, then hey, play him. Get rid of Kirk Cousins. That's how it goes.
Yep.
Better to have some options than no options. To the Alabama portion of the show. That's why we're here, right? Three first-round picks for the Tide last night. Again, J.C. Latham, number 7 overall to Tennessee. Dallas Turner, 17th overall to Minnesota. Terrion Arnold, 24th overall to Detroit. It was an offensive-heavy first round of the NFL draft. 23 offensive players were taken last night. NFL draft record that included each of the 14 first picks, 6 of which were quarterbacks, kind of alluding to Alex's frustrations here, at least tangentially related. If you're looking for some major in-depth NFL analysis and what last night might mean for the league as a whole or the 2024 draft class as a whole, this probably is not the show for you, as much as we were rambling there through the first few minutes here. Instead, guys, I wanted to talk about a few different things Alabama related. One of them being how we feel about where those three guys were taken in the first round. Another about some of the Alabama guys remaining going into day two and day three. But I wanted to start here. As is most cases with anything NFL related, there were many different ways to consume the draft last night. ESPN had the traditional broadcast. ESPN Plus had a few different variations, most notably with Pat McAfee and Bill Belichick, which I heard was actually pretty entertaining. And ABC had a College Game Day version, which is where I believe the three of us spent most of our night because of Nick Saban. It was his first extended assignment on the game day desk. And guys, I'll be honest, I thought he was spectacular last night. He played the role of analyst. He played the role of ex-head coach. He was insightful. He was charismatic. He knew a ton about the guys that he had faced before and did his homework on the guys that he hadn't. And he looked like he was having a ton of fun along the way. I'm curious, Alex, I'll throw it back to you. What'd you think of Nick Saban's TB performance last night?
I thought it was terrific, and I had no doubt that he would be insightful, that he can talk football as well as anybody in terms of being eloquent about it, and really for a mass audience too. A lot of coaches get bogged down too much in the details. He has a way of kind of cutting through that. But I think the thing that stood out to me the most, and the thing that I'm most excited about in terms of his College Game Day normal weekly segments now, is he wasn't afraid to be critical either. Like, I was very curious if he was going to be willing to say some things that can be construed as being negative, and he was not ashamed to do that. Like, I think of the Mims thing and talking about him basically pulling himself out of the SEC championship game. There were a couple other things in there where I was surprised in a good way that he wasn't holding back, because that's what you want. You don't want Stephen A. Smith takes. Like, he's not going to give you those, but he's going to give you what he sees as the hard truth when it comes to these guys as prospects and the decision-making that's being done by front offices. And I just hope that that carries over to the college football season in terms of the kind of analysis we'll get that isn't just surface level, hey, everybody's good. You know, this guy's really good at that. It's no, this guy's better than this guy for this reason. This guy's no good for this reason. We got more of that than I expected, especially for his first time being on television and in this sort of role.
Yeah. Mike, seems like you're in full agreement with that.
Yeah. I mean, the Mims thing was the biggest one that stood out in terms of, like, you know, he's not afraid to say something. And obviously, you know, it's probably a little bit easier for him because he's the ex-Alabama coach. You're talking about a Georgia player. That was a rivalry game. Wouldn't it surprise me if maybe Kirby kind of offered some frustrations to Saban about Mims and pulling himself out of that game in a pretty key moment. And I think even just searching it last night, it seems like Mims even had some regrets, if you want to put it that way, about doing it. And some of the stories that I've read since then, when he's, you know, talking about it. But, you know, that was again, for the same thing with me, that was the biggest question. I was like, can he be critical? Or is he just going to go down the list of every single draft pick like he would as a head coach and say, this player is great? You know, like, it's an SEC teleconference on a Wednesday. Like, you know, the Wednesday before Alabama plays LSU or Tennessee, Nick Saban's not sitting there telling us on, you know, his true thoughts and feelings about whoever they're playing. He had to do it in this case. And I think for the most part, he did. I don't think it was as critical as Bill Belichick. And I was reading some tweets about what Belichick was saying on the McAfee show, and he was just ripping apart some guys, even like Drake May, who the Patriots just took. And, you know, I think Belichick is probably wired a little bit more, just doesn't care what people think about him and is just going to say whatever's on his mind. He's going to be brutally honest. I think Saban's a little bit more diplomatic, a little bit more image conscious in that way, just because I think he's so used to being careful. But in this case, like, he had to compare players. I know he always hated doing that. You ever asked him, he's like, I hate to compare players. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm not going to do it. That was his job last night. Like, that was, where do you rank guys? What's the difference between this guy and that guy? And I thought he was pretty honest about it. Even with his own players, you know, in terms of Terry and Arnold and not having as much experience or not being as mature as a football player as Kool-Aid was and stuff like that. But, you know, I think Saban's always been very charismatic when he's on set. Like, it's not like his first time on TV. Like, he was on College Game Day multiple times last season. He was, you know, years and years going back in the past. And whenever he's on that set, he's always very engaging. He's probably his best quality for TV is he's a very good storyteller. And he's able to, again, make it very concise and make it funny. He kind of had a crack at Pat McAfee about being a butt guy with his ands and buts in terms of his scouting reports. And, you know, there's probably a double entendre there. It was very well done. I appreciated it. And again, that's, you kind of wonder too, like, if was his weekly hit on McAfee last year kind of a warm up to get him used to McAfee to being on set with him full time this year? And I think, you know, there's a strange chemistry between those two guys that I wouldn't have expected, but, you know, they kind of rib each other and they're good together, I think, honestly. So yeah, I thought it was a good debut. There's probably a couple of hiccups here and there. There was a word that he used for short people that he probably shouldn't have used. And then there was the big thing with Quinyon Mitchell that has continued to get attention. You know, today. I tweeted the exact quote from Nick Saban last night, and it's over 2.5 million views on my tweet as of this morning. So yeah, that's, we can talk about that, but in terms of like Saban on air on set, I thought he was really good. Maybe just kind of clean up some of the talking behind the scenes. That was one of the things that, just from having worked at ESPN and done some TV stuff myself, like, I don't think they want you kind of like chattering when someone else is talking. You're continually saying, yeah, yeah, yeah. Little things like that, I'm sure they'll coach him on, but the overall product I thought was pretty polished, and I think he'll be good this fall. But again, I think it's one thing to criticize Amarius Mims from Georgia. It's going to be a different thing if Alabama has a situation where they need to be criticized, and then you're Nick Saban criticizing Alabama. That's going to be a different animal, and we'll have to see, you know, how he handles that sort of situation.
And I was curious how we'll see more how he does in terms of criticizing other coaches, but the fact that Brian Kelly was probably sitting on a couch enjoying the first round and suddenly he's catching a stray from Nick Saban about the fact that they have like the worst defense imaginable. You have all this and didn't win a national championship. Like, how's that possible? I was happy to see Nick voice a lot of the thoughts that folks like us had watching LSU last season.
And Brian Kelly was on set because Kelly was on set before the draft and he was sitting next to Saban, and Saban turned to him and said, you know, I thought you had a national championship caliber offense last year. Now, if you get your defense fixed, you can go somewhere, is basically what he said. And I think Brian Kelly responded, like, well, I appreciate that. And I was thinking to myself, like, yeah, that is kind of a little bit of a shot in terms of like the context that we're so used to with them as coaches. It's a different context now. But then you start thinking about it too. It's like LSU's offense without Jaden Daniels, without Neighbors and Brian Thomas, without Emery, just went into the portal. It's probably not a national championship caliber offense next year. So, you know, the football aspect of that argument may not be sound, the logic of it, but it was a good interaction to see, at least between Kelly and Saban. Again, I think the more of that we see, the better it's going to be for ESPN.
Yeah, there were a lot of fun moments like that. I mean, overall, I thought it was very, very smooth. You know, he dropped one of his Saban lines, right? Like, there can be no great victories in life unless you overcome some adversity. They were talking about various aspects of various players during the pregame show. There was another, I think it was during the pregame show. It may have been during the actual draft broadcast. The draft was in Detroit, right? So there's, you know, Ann Arbor's, what, 40, 45 minutes away? Tons of Michigan fans in the background going, let's go blue. And Saban sitting right there just kind of smiling because we all saw what happened at the Rose Bowl. You mentioned the Quinyon Mitchell thing, like basically kind of openly admitting to tampering a little bit. Like, that was,
there's that enough was gray area there where he kind of just said, we're waiting for him to go in. Doesn't mean they asked him to go in.
Right. It was one of those things where if you walked up to Nick Saban this morning at the draft and you asked him for clarification or comment, he's going to deny that he was saying they were trying to get him out of the portal. And again, the wording of it is a little bit vague. He said he was our number one guy in the portal last year to try to get him to come out of the portal. He'll never get in the portal. I think Saban could argue that he was saying they were waiting for Mitchell to come out and that he never came to them, essentially.
Breaking news. All of these programs at this level do advanced scouting on group of five players, and they are ready for when they enter the portal. This is not anything new. Now, was there stuff going on behind the scenes? I don't know. It did make me think about an uncomfortable question from somebody on this screen to Nick Saban at a golf tournament about Tyler Harrell, but maybe we'll have to relitigate that.
Yeah. We don't have to relitigate it, but I mean, I think the general point remains the same. And, you know, he's talking about Tyler Harrell a couple of years ago, the Louisville player. Scott Satterfield did an interview with one of the Louisville newspapers, the Post Courier, I think, and kind of made a vague reference to Alabama tampering. It wasn't a direct shot, but it was pretty clear what he was trying to say. And that's what a lot of coaches do. Like, that's kind of the way you kind of accuse other teams of doing. And Saban does it himself. It's like, I'm not accusing anybody of anything, but you kind of are. And there's always a very fine line that coaches have walked with that. But, you know, I asked Nick Saban about it at the Regents Golf Tournament a couple of years ago, and he denied it. But, look, I think I think the general idea and the realist in all of us, I think, realizes that there's high school coaches and now there's NIL agents. There's a lot of different middlemen, if you will, that teams are able to talk to. Like, as far as I know, it's not against the NCAA rules, as it's been communicated to me by certain people, that if you talk to a high school coach, for instance, it's not really tampering. You know, if you're not talking directly to the player, making a direct plea for him to enter the portal. So again, there's levels of gray there. And I think any school's fan, whether it's, if you're a Georgia fan, you're an Alabama fan, you're an Auburn fan, whatever, I would be careful about being holier than thou when it comes to tampering in the portal, because it's really something that is pretty widespread.
Well, and the thing that kind of goes unspoken in this is, like, what if he had gone in the portal and Alabama got him, and you have three guys at cornerback who all are, I know Kool-Aid didn't go in the first round, we'll probably talk about that, but all legitimately first round caliber cornerbacks. That would have been absurd.
Right. And
with the Caleb Downs as your nickel.
Right. Yeah. That's
good. God.
You would have had, the question is, would you have gotten Terry and Arnold on the field? If you had Mitchell and you started Mitchell and Kool-Aid, would Terrion even be in the spot that he is right now? That would be, I mean, he'd probably play star for you. But it would be a completely different situation. So, and I don't know how many people were actually talking about Quinyon Mitchell a year ago out of Toledo. I mean, it good for Saban in Alabama if they saw this guy and were like, he's our number one guy on our board, transfer portal wise. But I don't remember people like that buzz being around necessarily him. So, yeah, I'm not saying it's revisionist history on Saban's part, but I think it makes Alabama look good to say that they wanted him a year ago.
Yeah. Well, and to that point, you know, Saban, a lot of the insight that he brought was a lot of the, you know, some of the little stuff, like, you know, again, like if Quinyon Mitchell jumps in the portal, that was one of the guys that we were going to go after, like little things like that. You know, he had some good stuff about the, you know, obviously all the LSU guys, just, you know, because he broke down film of those guys and, you know, how Jaden Daniels was, you know, the most dynamic playmaker that they had to scheme against or defend against last year. So he was able to kind of break down exactly what he did well, what he's going to have to improve on. You know, he was the number two pick overall to Washington. You know, and then like some of the other little things too, like obviously it was a huge night for quarterbacks too. So like Saban brought some insight about, you know, I guess he had a cup of coffee with Caleb Williams, right, when they were on the recruiting trail. And he was like, yeah, like even back then you could tell that this guy had designs on being a star. Clearly everything's come to fruition, right? Heisman Trophy winner, number one overall pick. Chicago looks like they could be sneaky good next year. But then also, you know, Drake May, former Alabama commit, right? Like Saban was very complimentary of him, even joked a little bit like, I should be mad at this guy, right? But, you know, ended that segment by saying, yeah, like, yeah, like this guy is wired right. He's going to be really good. This is a guy that New England can build around. Lots of insight like that, like talking about Mitchell and the cornerbacks, you know, not just Terrion and Kool-Aid, but also Cooper DeJean and Nate Wiggins. You know, he went on like a minute long explanation, like in only the way that Saban can, explaining the importance of like, look, like you need man corners when you play defense, because, you know, if you can't do this, then you can't do this. But if you can do this, it allows you to do X, Y, and Z, and just, you know, kind of going into that coach mode that we really appreciate when he stood at the lectern talking to us every week. So he had a lot of really good moments, and it was really smooth. We kind of got to see all sides, some that we have seen before, some that we didn't see. I thought it was really impressive, and kind of like what you were saying, Alex, really excited for what this means moving forward into game day next year, right? Because a lot of the players, both on Alabama and in a lot of other SEC schools, he'll be plenty familiar with. So that analysis, I think, is still going to be top notch. What I'm curious to see is, you know, if he continues to do this 4, 5, 6 years down the road, right? He's getting older, so we're not sure exactly how long he'll want to do this. But, you know, the further away he gets from the players he knows, is the analysis going to be as good? Is the insight going to be as in-depth as it currently is? That's what I'm, you know, knowing Saban and his work ethic and his work habits, yes, probably. But, you know, some of those little things, like those were the things I was curious about. Like, as you get further away from the guys that you coach, how much, how good is the insight and in the analysis going to be? I think it'll still be as good, but maybe, maybe not as in-depth as maybe it was last night.
I don't think it'll suffer at all. And you talk, you hear him talk about the wanting to be part of a team with the game day thing. I think he wants to recreate his professional environment as much as possible without the stress of being a college football coach. And I think part of that is going to be breaking down film whenever he can. Like, he is the best evaluator recruiter of all time. I don't think there's really any doubt about that at this point. So if he can lend that to the scouting part as opposed to the recruiting part, I think he's going to thrive. My only question is, he contractually obligated to wear a shade of crimson every time he's in front of a television. That will be curious to see. If he wears orange, people might lose their minds.
And I'll say this too. I do think there's some first-person perspective that will be lost over time, just because he can talk about Terron Arnold sitting in meetings next to him and going to his house and playing, was it Rummy Cube? I've never heard of that until last night.
It brings people together. It says so on the box.
Coach, but like, he can talk about a lot of that first person stuff. He can talk about first person, what it was like to play against or to coach against Jaden Daniels. That will go away over time. I think, you know, he'll have a few players next year, like Tyler Booker and Malachi Moore, who he'll be able to sit down on that set and talk about the draft next year. Obviously, some of that will fade. But I agree with Alex that he can sit down, watch the film, and he's ESPN's top scout. Like, him and Lewis Riddick, I think, are the two best football guys that they have. I mean, Riddick's gotten interviews to be NFL GMs or to be an NFL GM. And I think the two of them are really, really good in terms of just the X's and O's. And again, explaining it too, because it's one thing to know the X's and O's. I think both of them do a really good job of communicating what they see from an evaluation standpoint. But about the crimson thing too, it did strike me, like, Nick Saban's not just an Alabama guy. And I think sometimes people forget that, just because he's been at Alabama for 17 years or was at Alabama for 17 years. But like he mentioned last night, he lived in Michigan for 10 years. Like, he coached in the MAC. He played in the MAC. Like, he's coached in the NFL as a head coach. He's been an assistant coach in the NFL. He's been an assistant coach, you know, for Ohio State. Like, his experience goes well beyond Alabama. And I think as he gets a little bit more detached from Alabama, just in terms of time, you know, away from it, I think we might see some of that history come out in him, where he's not just the Alabama coach. He's known a little bit more as a lot of other things that he was over his career.
Introducing the two-way V4, where groundbreaking fuel cell technology meets fresh foam cushioning for the ultimate performance. With fuel cell, each step feels explosive, delivering unparalleled energy return. Paired with fresh foam, experience maximum comfort throughout the game. Its lightweight textile upper offers support and breathability without sacrificing agility. Whether you're hitting the clutch shot or locking down the opposition, the two-way V4 gives you the tools to play at a high level. Learn more and purchase the two-way for yourself at newbalance.com.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
And the point of him being a masterful scout, maybe the greatest of all time, on display again last night, right? 3 first-round picks for him gives him 47 first-round picks in 17 years as Alabama's head coach. That is just a staggering number. Again, J.C. Latham, 7th overall to the Titans. Dallas Turner, 17th overall to the Vikings. And Terron Arnold, 24th overall to the Lions. How do we feel about these picks, these players, these landing spots? Do we have any just kind of initial thoughts? Alex, I'll throw it back to you.
Yeah, I liked him overall. I thought Dallas should have gone higher. I think every defensive player should have gone higher. It was just the way the draft fell. I mean, GMs and coaches just went insane with quarterbacks and receivers and offensive tackles, I guess, is the other one. But Dallas slipping to 17, he lands in a place that outside of quarterback, they're in pretty good shape, and they do need an edge rusher. So I think he can slide in there immediately. And then I think the Terron Arnold thing is just absolutely perfect for him. And you go to a winning place, and you go to a place where you're going to have a lot of familiarity there with Gibbs and with Branch. And Nick Saban talked about the fact how Branch and Terron can kind of fit together right away. I think that's a really good thing for Terron in terms of knowing where he's going to play, but also having a sounding board there. So I think it all shaked out pretty well for Alabama. I just can't believe Terron fell all the way to 24, but again, it's the same thing with Dallas, where when you're picking Bo Nix in the top 15 and, you know, Michael Penix is going in the top 10, the draft just did a weird thing where it went all in on quarterbacks and offensive players.
Yeah, I know that we had kind of talked and followed the smoke a little bit yesterday about, you know, Latham potentially going as high as 5, right? Because some of those teams in the first round, and especially the top 10, needed an offensive tackle. And he ended up going 7th overall to Tennessee. I personally really liked it. Mike, what did you think about where Latham landed?
Yeah, I mean, it was probably right where I expected, maybe a little bit higher. You know, I think there was some talk that maybe he would be the first tackle taken. He wasn't. That was still Joe Alt to the Chargers at 5. So, you know, at the end of the day, not a big difference in salary, not really a big difference in whatever. Just you're the 7th pick instead of the 5th pick. That's all it really means. But I agree. Like, you know, I think Terron and Dallas slid a little bit, but that was probably more just how the draft was unfolding. And there was a run on quarterbacks early and the run on offensive tackles early, and then the defensive players kind of slotted in after that. And it just was a little bit different than what some of the mock drafts have had, but I don't know if that was an indictment on either player. I think, yes. I mean, Latu from UCLA went over Turner. Quinyon Mitchell went over Arnold. That could just be a scheme preference and whatever. You know, again, it doesn't – 10 years from now, if Dallas Turner is a better player, nobody cares that he was drafted behind Latu. So, you know, there was only one pick from Alabama in the top 15, which I looked up was the fewest they've had in the top 15 since 2017, which is kind of an embarrassment of riches because Alabama's had multiple top 15 picks every year since 2018, 19, 20, 21, 22. Some years, I think they had 3 or 4, which I think in this particular case speaks to there just wasn't quite the offensive talent from Alabama coming out this year. Part of that's the quarterback. You didn't have a quarterback like they did last year in Bryce. I think the bigger conversation is probably wide receiver, because that's typically where they've been pumping guys out, top 15 picks, and that slowed down. We talked about that last season. Like, that was a little bit of an issue just in terms of continuing to bring in that talent at wide receiver. Jermaine Burton's good, but he's not a first-round pick. He definitely wasn't a top 15 pick. He'll probably go in the third round tonight. And then Isaiah Bond had some promise, but he's gone. So, you know, there's portal issues that Alabama's been dealing with at wide receiver. And I think that's it's in the big picture problematic, just because you look at what LSU just put out in terms of Brian Thomas and Malik Nabers. You look at what Texas is putting out with Worthy and A.D. Mitchell and Washington with the three guys that they put in. And, you know, Alabama with a new coaching staff needs to continue to recruit wide receivers and retain wide receivers, which the previous staff just wasn't quite able to do the last couple of years as well as they were able to do before that, which was historic levels in terms of what they were putting out a wide receiver.
In a sense, like, I'm not an idiot. I'm not saying that Nick Saban retiring was a good thing for Alabama in any way, but the ability to get an offensive coach who has a track record of at receiver, in a way, if it was going to happen, it came along at the right time because it did reset the expectations at that position. You keep Ryan Williams. I know he's recruited by the previous staff, but I don't know if we're going to talk about it here, but Kalen DeBoer having a huge day, especially on the offensive side of the ball. They can say, yeah, I know LSU just put X number of guys, but, you know, we did it too. We did it in Washington. We can do it here as well. You just wonder who is the next Alabama receiver to go in the top 15. Is it a portal guy, Jeremy Bernard I don't know if he's necessarily that level of talent, or does it get all the way down to a Ryan Williams? I am interested to see when that changes. It's only a matter of time, but it has been noticeable, the drop off in terms of elite talent at the receiver position for Alabama.
Yep. Yeah. Well, you talked about the, you know, banner night for Kalen DeBoer and what he was able to do at Washington. Only one school had three picks in the top 20 last night, and that was Washington. Roma Dunze, number nine, or Michael Penix, start there, number eight to Atlanta. Roma Dunze, nine to Chicago. And then Troy Fontenot, offensive guard, number 20 to Pittsburgh. They're going to have a few more receivers and maybe another offensive lineman or two probably taken today in the second and third round with Jalen Polk, Jalen McMillan. Roger Rosengarten, I believe, is one of the top offensive linemen now on the board. Pretty good night for Alabama's new coach, right? If you'd have told Alabama fans that, like, hey, like, the guy that's going to replace Nick Saban is going to have the same number of first round draft picks as Nick Saban coming into this draft. You know, I think one, people would have been like, all right, who are you getting? And two,
smart.
You know, perhaps. But, you know, at the same time, you know, like, I think they'd be tickled, right? Like, just, you know, it kind of shows that, you know, maybe it was the perfect storm for Washington last year, but it also kind of shows that, like, hey, like, this DeBoer guy, not only is he a really great play caller, but he's able to assemble a staff and really help these guys develop, right? Who'd have thought Michael Penix, when he was dealing with injuries in Indiana, would end up a top 10 pick? Who'd have thought Roma Dunze, when he was kind of, you know, I don't want to say toiling on Washington's roster for the first couple of years he was there, but I'm not sure people thought of him as a top 10 pick after his first two seasons at Washington. And then, you know, last year we saw what Washington's offensive line did. It's no surprise that Troy Fontenot was one of the, you know, first offensive linemen off the board, and a few other guys are probably going to go over the next couple of days. Like, this is, you know, if you're Alabama, I think one, you're happy for the guys that went, but two, you're really encouraged about the guy that came in to replace Nick Saban, right?
Well, I mean, it shows that he can evaluate talent. And I know there's some consternation over, you know, signing some three-star guys, four-star guys, when you're used to signing five-star guys. Well, that's what he was getting at Washington. I mean, he wasn't getting the elite of the elite, and he was able to help develop them into first-round talents, second-round talents. It shows that he knows what he's looking for, and him and his coaching staff know how to develop those kind of players. So I think it's a good sign for not just what they're going to be able to do in the recruiting trail, but short term, how can they take a roster that I think overall is more talented than the one they had before and develop it over the course of the offseason?
100%. Still on the board for Alabama as we go into day two. Second and third round, we're recording this on Friday morning. Second and third round of Friday night. Fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh round going to start at noon, I believe, on Saturday, or maybe that's 11 a.m. our time in Central Time. Still on the board for the Tide, though, Kool-Aid McKinstry, Chris Braswell, Jermaine Burton, Justin Aboigbe, and then Will Riker, Jace McClellan, Jalen Key, Trezman Marshall. We'll see how many of those guys maybe get drafted between today and tomorrow. I know that we've kind of talked a little bit kind of about Kool-Aid and the fact that, you know, he kind of entered last season, last college football season, is, you know, cornerback one for whatever reason. And I'm sure there's a few smaller reasons he kind of slid down. And then the way the draft ultimately panned out last night with the run of offensive players, just kind of pushed all the defensive players back, which meant a guy like Kool-Aid, who I think a lot of people maybe thought he'd go late in the first round, push back to now the second round. Still a little weird to kind of see him, you know, maybe not held in as high regard, or to maybe see some of these other guys, you know, maybe move past him in the draft evaluation process. Mike, what do you think about where Kool-Aid is at and, you know, where he could possibly go today?
Yeah. I mean, just, I think he's going to go early. Like I first five picks probably tonight, but I think the ceiling is probably a little bit lower on him compared to some of the other guys, and Terrion's just a little bit longer. You know, has the better measurables. You know, Kool-Aid I think is more of a higher floor, potentially slightly lower ceiling type of player. I think he's going to be a reliable starter for whoever gets him. Really solid second round pick. Could start for 10 years in the NFL. But I think teams in the first round want to take that swing on a player that they feel like could be, you know, a 10-time Pro Bowler. So, yeah, I don't think there's a massive difference. I think even Nick Saban, when he was talking about it last night, said there's not a huge difference. But, you know, it is what it is. Like, I don't think it's going to mean a whole lot at the end of the day. Will, you know, the contract is really the only thing. And like, you fall 10 spots, you're gonna make a little bit less money. But it could help him, because if you don't have that fifth year option,
yeah,
then you're a free agent, starting in, you know, after year four, and you could potentially get paid more guaranteed money at that point than it would be staying for a fifth year under that option. So there could be a benefit to actually going early in the second round for him compared to late in the first.
Yeah, I don't think Kool-Aid did anything to fall. I mean, I think it was a couple of things happening. One, when you do enter the season as the guy, you get picked apart a little bit. He got beat on a couple of plays, but every cornerback does that. I think the thing that hurt him was the reputation that Arnold was the better athlete. And I think there's a lot of truth to that, but you saw him go out and he ran a good 40 in the 4.5s on the pro day, and then the injury at the combine. I think that's going to scare off some people. But I just remember even during the course of last season, feeling more and more that, hey, Arnold's making a lot of plays. And I talked to a receiver in the SEC, one of the top three receivers in the SEC last year, and I said, who would you rather go against? He said, no doubt. I don't want to go against Kool-Aid. Like, that guy is a technician. Like, he will not let you get to the spot you want to get to. So while there's respect for Arnold, I think there might be more respect among players for Kool-Aid. I think he's just a guy who's so technically sound. It's been a pro really for a while now. And I think is going to slide into whatever organization takes him in the second round. And I think have a really good career just because he's built that way already. It's just a matter of, is he healthy?
Yeah, no, and I think to Mike's point about maybe Kool-Aid having a little bit of a higher floor, maybe not as high of a ceiling, but just, you know, that kind of level of consistency, I think, is what makes him a really attractive NFL prospect. And even Nick Saban said, you know, when he kind of compared Tarion and Kool-Aid maybe a little bit more competitively mature a little bit, whereas Tarion, you know, that higher ceiling will allow him to make some pretty good plays. But, you know, when you take the risk on making some of those plays, sometimes you get beat a little bit. So, I don't think it's, you know, second round NFL draft pick. I don't think that's a bad thing or something to hang your hat on at all. You know, and to Mike's point, too, like if you're really, really forward thinking, if you're Kool-Aid, right, like you're, you know, 4-year deal if you're a second round draft pick. So you'll get an opportunity to sign some sort of extension at the age of 25. And you look at the way some defensive backs sign their extensions, 3 or 4 year deal. I mean, you're looking at 2 separate paydays before you turn 30, right? And when we think NFL and some of these guys, like, that's generational changing wealth. If you're as good as you believe, you know, you are, and a guy like Kool-Aid, you know, I think we've all seen him enough to know that he's going to make a living in the NFL for a long, long time.
Yeah, you'll be fine.
Of the remaining guys, obviously that was a lot on Kool-Aid, but guys like Braswell Burton, Aboigbe, even Reichard McClellan, I'll throw it out to both of you guys. Who is maybe the most intriguing in terms of maybe your curiosity levels of where they may land over the next 2 days? Who do you think fascinates you guys the most?
I don't think there's a ton of like doubt in terms of like what the order will be. I think Kool-Aid's going to be the first guy to go. I think Braswell's probably going to be the second guy to go tonight. And I think Burton either goes late in the third round, maybe, you know, early on Saturday. Burton's probably the biggest wild card because I do think teams, you know, probably will, there might be a team that bets on his speed. And I think his speed is a little bit underrated. And that could be something that, you know, sells him. I think, you know, personality wise, Jermaine Burton might not grade out very well in terms of NFL scouts. I mean, I think we've all seen it.
Nick, why do you say that, Mike? Like
he can get hot, he can get heated. You know, there's you're risking, you know, the unnecessary roughness sort of penalties with him. That's been documented. I think Tarion even did a next round interview, you know, towards the end of last season where they asked him who's the strangest personality on the team, and he did not hesitate in saying Jermaine Burton. But NFL scouts, you know, pay attention to that. So that could be something that might cause him to drop a little bit. I don't know. But he's probably the biggest wild card. I mean, Will Reichard, I guess, as a kicker is always a little bit wild card because you never know when teams are going to pick a kicker. Sometimes it just happens random times. The Patriots did it in the fourth round, I think, last year, and that has busted so far for them. You know, the Raiders did it with Sebastian Janikowski in the first round, so who knows? But I think Reichard has a decent shot of getting picked. And then, you know, Boygby, I think, is just a solid player. He's going to go in the third or fourth round. A team that drafts him, they're going to get a player who's going to play for them for 8 years and maybe never make a Pro Bowl, but just be a good player for him. And then I'd be surprised currently if Marshall or Key gets drafted. I mean, maybe McClellan goes late. I just don't think he's enough of an athlete in terms of his explosiveness and the big playability out of him to really get high, you know, mid you know, to be like a fourth or fifth round pick, like that might be high for him. He's probably more of a sixth or seventh round pick. But I don't know if there's going to be a ton of surprises, but I say that, and maybe McClellan will go in the third round and Burton will go in the seventh round. Who knows? You never really know.
Burton's one that I wonder the transition to the NFL, how much could that help him? It could hurt him, right? Outside of structure and organization of college. Maybe he'd do better outside of that. Maybe mm-hmm. when it's as simple as perform or you're cut, perform and make money, millions of dollars. That has the ability to change your outlook on the way you handle yourself as a professional. And if he can do that, I think he's got all the talent in the world. There were times like the Texas A&M game where he's just like, where's this guy been? Because he can just go up and make a play and really turn it on. I'm very curious to see what he's like as a pro. And then Braswell, to me, is a guy who I think if he hadn't battled injuries, if he hadn't been stuck behind some really talented guys, might have a better reputation than he does now. Because I know in the building, and especially from teammates, they raved about his ability, how sound he was as technically speaking as a pass rusher, and he's got the physical build to say that he can play at that level. I think he's got to have a chance to have a good long career. I don't know if he'll be an all pro at any point, but I just think his ability to do everything you ask for in that position and have the maturity that he has, I think he's got a chance to have a really good career. And then Burton's the wild card, but I still think a wild card that I could see it paying off.
Yeah. No, he's got talent. People forget, like, he was a pretty highly recruited kid and, you know, to Georgia. But I agree. I think Braswell could be somebody that goes in the second round tonight. And I think if GM goes to the podium after and says that we think we got a first round type of talent who just never had the opportunity at Alabama to really show that he was that sort of player. We think we got a steal sort of player. I think that, and he's always had it. Like, he's a 5-star pick himself, Chris Braswell. And like you said, was stuck behind Will Anderson, Drew Sanders, Dallas Turner. And then finally got a shot and I think made most of it last year. Last 2 years, really.
Guy like Jermaine Burton would be a pretty good fit in New England, pair a receiver with the brand new quarterback they got going on out there. And then Atlanta, to bring it back full circle, Alex, 3 picks over the next 2 rounds. I think they could use an edge rusher. I'm not saying that these guys should pick the Alabama guys, but if we want to find a home for them, I think these picks make a lot of sense. I'm just saying.
What they need versus what they'll get is clearly two different things in this world we're living in. Maybe they'll go running back because Lord knows they don't already have a good one.
Hey, Jace McClellan will be there. That guy does not go down on first contact. So I'm not saying, but I'm just saying. That's all we've got today, guys. We'll be back probably early to mid next week to kind of recap some of the transfer portal stuff. If I have this right, Mike, you might have to check me. The football portal window closes next Tuesday, and then the basketball/all other sports portal window closes Wednesday.
Yeah,
so we'll be back probably sometime one of those 2 days to kind of recap everything. A few more basketball moves, a few more football moves. There could be a lot more movement over the next, 3, 4, 5 days as those portals come to a close. We'll circle back. If anything interesting happens over the next couple of days of the draft, we'll recap some of that too. In the meantime, though, be sure to rate and review the show wherever you listen to your podcast, Apple, Stitcher, Spotify, even our Bama 247 YouTube page. Subscribe to Bama 247 and 247 Sports. We're running a special because we're always running a special. Are we running a special? I'd like to think that we are because we always are.
Can't check the site.
I think it might be 50% off. I could be wrong.
50%, 30%, 60%.
Yeah, I think it's 30 now. I don't want the FTC to come after us. It's pretty sure it's 30 now. I think 50% expired on Tuesday.
Oh, good.
The deal, you don't have to pay 100% for an annual VIP membership if you go to the website and sign up now. That's all we've got today. Appreciate Alex and Mike for joining us as always. We appreciate you guys for listening, and we will talk to you all again soon.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level.
old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast wherever you get your podcasts.
The chilling new original docuseries on Paramount Plus.
Why did he kill his family? The answer lies across the ocean in a woman named Sylvie.
She's a can model.
Where desire leads to deception.
I ended up spending $12,000 and $15,000 a day.
It was addictive.
I can't get you out.
And obsession leads to murder.
Who did this to your family?
You can't really maintain a fantasy forever.
Control Alt Desire. Now streaming on Paramount Plus.